You're listening to Trek FM.
This episode of To the Journey is brought to you by Audible.com. Offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hi, this is Robert Duncan McNeil, also known as Tom Paris from Star Trek Voyager. You're listening to Trek FM.
Maybe it's the journey. To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is another episode of To the Journey.
To the journey!
My name is Charlene Schmidt, and with me, as he is every week, is...
Tristan Riddell.
Tristan, it is good to be back. We took a week off because I was pulling double shifts in the cargo bay, and boy, am I glad that is done.
Well, I'm glad that we're recording again, and I'm glad that things are back to normal, and we have a bit of a treat this week. I mean, it's a little late in the news, but we wanted to do something.
Yeah, okay, yeah, while we were taking our break, there was a little bit of sad news. We lost another person in the Trek family, and that is, of course, Grace Lee Whitney, who died a couple weeks ago, as of the time we were recording this, and she was 85 years old. She had a good long life. She, is best known probably for her role as Yeoman Janice Rand on Star Trek, the original series. Even though she was only in something like the first 8 episodes, it wasn't that much, but she was just that memorable of a character and has, you know, she did so many conventions for the longest time. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing her at Star Trek Las Vegas in 2013, and sadly I was looking forward to seeing her again this year, and that's just not meant to be, unfortunately. But there will definitely be a lot of celebration and remembrance of her life and her, both, I'm sure, on the whole convention circuit all year round. And so I am looking forward to that much. And in light of this, we thought that we would pay tribute to Grace Lee Whitney in the one way that we can in TTJ fashion. And that is to do a commentary on the episode Flashback, which is the season 3 episode. It is the second episode of the season, and it was to commemorate the 30th anniversary of Star Trek in 1996, of which she is a guest star.
And this is how Netflix describes it. Captain Janeway participates in a mind meld with Tuvok, reliving his experiences on the USS Excelsior under the command of Captain Sulu.
That's right, Mr. Oh My himself.
Oh My.
Yes, yeah, sipping his tea, he is going to be on Voyager. I think this is the one really big crossover that they did with the original series. Am I right?
This was the crossover episode. This was, in honor, as you said, in honor of the 30th anniversary, as well as celebrating the Star Trek films and, of course, Undiscovered Country. George Takei was all about it and was really looking forward to working with the cast of Voyager. And him, along with Grace Lee Whitney, said it was just an incredible script and an incredible episode. So how about we get this party started?
Let's do this thing. All right, we're going to do a countdown. So cue up your Netflix or however it is you watch Star Trek. Like we always say with our commentaries, we're not judging. Just watch Star Trek. So I'll count you down. We'll do 3, 2, 1, go, and then off we will go. 3, 2, 1, go. And we're off. I'm getting thirsty. I think. I'm not sure what this is. Do you remember? It's been a long time since I've watched this episode, by the way.
It's, well, I mean, we see a nice, nice glass of what looks like grapefruit juice, and,
It does look like grapefruit juice, yes.
Yeah. I'm sure that's probably what it was, or papaya juice, something like that. But once again, Neelix is trying to cook something or make something for Tuvok, thinking that it would please him. But all he wants is bland plomeek soup.
Right. I don't think I would enjoy Vulcan cuisine very much because it does sound incredibly bland and flavorless. Not a whole lot of spice.
No. Although, actually, you know what? That sounds pretty good for me because I'm a very, very common man when it comes to my food. The blander, the better, usually is.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm a total opposite. I like things with a little bit of flair and a little bit of spice. And I like different textures, different sequences of flavors, except for sweet and sour. That's a combination I can't do.
Well, now that you're living in the Southwest, you know, it's you should be able to be exposed to that a
great
deal more.
We're in Spice City, baby. I am ready for some screaming Mexican food. I tell you what, I'm so excited for that.
Now, I always enjoyed the, maybe I shouldn't always enjoy, but I usually enjoy the dynamic between Neelix and Tuvok, and it's something that we've seen since episode one.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was an awkward connection, very odd couple-esque, and I think it worked more times than it didn't.
I agree.
And it was just...
Oh, that's not good. Fire in the mess hall. Sorry, you were saying...
Oh, it's quite all right. I love that word choice. It decimated my breakfast. I'm going to have to integrate that into my daily lexicon.
Do you decimate your breakfast often?
When the few times that I've actually tried to make myself breakfast. I made myself toast this morning. Thankfully, I pulled that off.
Okay, that's good. That's good. See, I... go really simplistic. If I decimate my protein shake in the morning, something's really wrong. If I can't do that.
I usually have the Janeway breakfast where it's just coffee.
Breakfast champions.
I want to know how many times they are investigating a possible energy source. That needs to be on some sort of Voyager bingo.
Wow. Yes, that somebody needs to count that up because I bet it's a lot. That's a good call. I believe Neelix has already attempted to blow up his kitchen. He doesn't need help with that.
There was a... whenever they could find ceruleum or something like that, like everybody says, like, oh, we could use it. It's very much like... at the office, whenever it's like, oh, well, you know, like we're reaching the end of the fiscal year, we have some extra cash to burn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, who wants it? And of course, everybody raises their hands. I mean,
well, yeah. Who wouldn't? Money?
Every department is like, yeah, no, we could use that for, you know, paperclips.
Right. Because they're not spread about all over the place, or you could invest in some pens that everybody's going to lose, and then they all turn up again in weird cycles.
I feel like whenever Tuvok is sick, mm-hmm. it's kind of like when Worf got beaten up, okay? Like, you know, they would always beat up Worf in TNG to show things got serious, that this bad guy was a real bad guy because he could beat up Worf.
Right.
And whenever Tuvok got sick or had a headache, it was very much, oh man, something big is going to happen. This is huge. Tuvok doesn't just casually go, oh, I'm tired, I'm exhausted, that's why I have a headache.
Yeah, it's true. You're right. Because with his superior Vulcan strength, he can withstand going without sleep for days or eating. Mm-hmm. So if he's feeling ill, you're right, it's got to be just downright, oh, the end of the world here. And I don't know, we always say that Harry's the whipping boy, but when it comes to serious illness, they pick on Tuvok a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hmm.
Okay, so this is the second time that we've seen Tuvok younger.
Second time.
Yeah, because think back to the episode where Paris and Tuvok and the Doc are trapped in that vacuole where time is going by slower
than
on the outside. We see a flashback of him as a teenager
trying
to learn, you know, like learn the teachings of Serac and all that kind of business.
Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. Good call.
So this is the second time that we've seen him as a young person. And I'm wondering if there was any other time, like a character that we've seen as a young person twice or more than twice, because we saw Paris as a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
We saw Harry. We saw Harry in that dream flashback where he had like the chicken pox or something.
Yeah, something like that.
And then we saw Janeway as a little girl in this, in flashback. We see her later on.
Yes, although that's not Janeway. I just want to say that up front right now. I know that's like the end of the episode, but
yeah.
Could they have not cast that just a little better? This girl looks nothing like her.
I know. Yeah, when we get to it, you guys will see what we're talking about. But
yeah.
And then we saw Chakotay as a young person.
Yes, we did.
Right before he goes off to the academy. And we saw B'Elanna, of course, when she was on the camping trip.
Mm-hmm. In Lineage.
So we saw Kes a lot.
Oh, yeah. A couple times.
So that's in one episode.
It was before and after.
Yeah. And then... So we haven't seen Neelix as a young person.
No. No, he only talks about his past, like in Jatrell. Right.
And is there a character I'm forgetting? We saw Seven as a young person.
Yeah, we did.
We saw Seven when she got assimilated. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's everyone.
I guess,
right?
Wow. That's kind of an interesting point to make. I mean, we didn't see, with the exception maybe of Rascals, and I'm not sure how much that really counts. Like, did we see a whole lot of the baby versions of the TNG cast very much, or DS9? I can't think back to many instances where that happened.
You know what? You're right. I don't remember too much Deep Space Niners.
No. And with TNG, I know that they did flashbacks with Deanna Troi in a 7th season episode. But yeah. I'm having a hard time. Okay, well, the Picard had younger version flashbacks. But he wasn't a kid. He was an academy cadet or fresh out of the academy. I'm not sure which.
That's true, but it was still a younger version of him. So
yeah, yeah.
Huh, that's interesting. Yeah, yeah. So I guess Neelix is the only person in the Voyager cast where we haven't seen him as a young person.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess we can envision it because baby Talaxians look a lot like their adult versions. We've seen Talaxian children.
That's true. That's true. And I guess a younger version of the Doc would just be a tricorder.
He would be insulted by that.
I know he would. After I said that, it was really funny because even though this is it's fictional, but I was just like, ooh, he would be offended if he heard me say that.
Yes, he would. Well, he would give you that side eye, like, you disgust me.
Or would that be a technologist? Technologism?
Hmm. Yeah, there's not a word made for that yet, I don't think. You made it up right here.
Right here, right now.
That's
history
right.
Made onto uh-huh. the journey.
Now, did you watch this when it first aired, when the 30th anniversary hoopla was going on?
Yeah, I saw all of Voyager live.
Okay. I you know, even though we do this show every week, and we've done this for a couple of years now, I forget every aspect of our stories because my memory is awful. Yeah, I did too.
The 30th anniversary. We've talked about that a couple of times on this show, but the 30th anniversary, that was in the golden age of Star Trek.
It was.
We had like two shows on the air and one just finished. And we had more movies on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a big deal. Like they had a TV special of the 30th anniversary, and so many people showed up. They had red carpet events. People were talking about what they were wearing, and it was might be an exaggeration,
yeah.
But you know what I'm saying. And then like they all show up, and there's this big auditorium. They had skits and presentations and musical guests and guest speakers. And I remember that 5 years before that, the 25th anniversary was a straight to VHS tape of Leonard Nimoy and
William Shatner.
Bill Shatner just talking to the camera saying, you know, Star Trek's pretty great. Here are some clips.
Right. That's kind of what it was. It was a big transition, but I guess that's how much bigger Star Trek had become, I guess, capitalizing on the success of The Next Generation and then bringing in two more shows after that, plus more movies.
Yep.
Yeah, it was like the Academy Awards of Star Trek that year. And boy, did I play the heck out of that special, because they did special skits with like the cast of Frasier, and at the very end everybody gets to go on stage and they got a flag that was flown in space.
I forgot about the flag part, but I remember people like they called everybody's name in the order that they appeared in the credits.
Yes,
you know, starting with the original series first, I think.
I'm pretty sure they did. Yeah,
and then all went announced everybody's name all the way up and through Voyager up until Harry Kim, and
Last but not least,
and it was just so cool because they were all there. You know, they were all there, and everybody was there except Patrick Stewart. He was in England.
Yes, but he did a video that
yeah,
they
he
played.
Yeah, he satellite in, but there was technical issues.
Oh, I don't remember that part. I thought
yes,
they pre-recorded it.
No, there was they did it via satellite, and they did it live, and it went sporadic and went weird and then cut out, and so we didn't get his speech.
Really?
Yes.
Whoa, I gotta go back and watch this all over again, because I thought that was embedded in my brain and I do not remember this.
No, I remember this clearly, and God strike me down if I'm lying or if I'm mistaken. But
all right.
Actually, not literally.
I don't want to strike you down, but maybe I'll say...
I'm 99.9% sure.
Maybe I'll say, you owe me some candy, sir.
I think that's better than trying to invoke God's wrath. Candy is much better.
Candy is always good. Unless that's all you're eating, in which case you ought to rethink your eating habits.
It's also available online. It's on YouTube, which I'm very happy for, because I lost my
tape. I'm
going to
watch it on YouTube.
Yeah.
We do not get nearly enough Chakotay and Tuvok interacting.
You know, I was just thinking that as they were walking down the hallway, I was like, I know that they had a contentious relationship at the beginning, and we talked about, like, if Janeway died in a previous episode, we talked about how their relationship would go forward. Actually, I really like this that line right there when Chakotay's basically saying, just try not to think about it. He's like, well, it's kind of hard to think about it when I have a big, huge piece of technology on my parietal lobe of my skull.
It makes a good point.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just like, it's a relationship I would have liked to have seen evolve a little bit more. Now, obviously, it did evolve a little bit because we're in season 3 and they hated each other in season 1, or at least Chakotay hated Tuvok in season 1.
Yes, for being a spy.
Yeah. They developed a working relationship, and it, I don't know, I would have liked to have seen a little bit more camaraderie as the years go by.
Absolutely, because, yeah, you think that they came from a place of maybe not downright hating each other, but they were certainly not friends. And there was definitely potential there to show a solidifying friendship. Mm-hmm. I would have enjoyed seeing the two work together more. That was one of those things that they just never really capitalized on, and they could have and probably should have, because there was good stuff there. And honestly, we don't get enough of Tuvok in general.
It always weirds me out. I shouldn't say weirds me out, but like, we just did a fade to black, a quick fade to black and come back up within the episode. That always freaks me out in TV, because that wasn't a commercial break. That was a fade to black and come back for effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the networks hate that. They cannot stand that when you fade to black. And I can't remember if I've mentioned this before on the show. I'm pretty sure I have, but I just love this tidbit of trivia. Joss Whedon, when he was doing Firefly, he absolutely insisted on cutting to black instead of just going straight to commercial, because he wants to cut to black, have the audience breathe for a couple seconds, then go to commercial. But yet the networks don't allow that, because they have computers to scrub the episode, so whenever you get that much black, it'll automatically put in a commercial. So what he did was, is that instead of putting black on the screen, he put a color that was just under black that wouldn't be registered by the computers. Which I think is just genius. That way he guaranteed that it would be cut to black, 1, 2, commercial.
Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't know he did that.
Yeah, I love that little bit of trivia, and it's just like, seeing that just made me think of it.
Yeah, that's pretty genius. You can have your cake and eat it too.
Whenever I picture Tim Russ in my mind, I always picture that ridiculous hair that he had. That, like,
the Voyager hair?
The Voyager hair. And like, whenever I see him out in the wild, I'm just kind of like, why don't you have that? That line of hair that goes over the top of your head.
I just love the way that you put that, out in the wild, as if he's like hanging out in jungles in Central America or something.
Yeah. Out in the Sahara, like he was in Spaceballs.
There you go. Right. Which is my favorite appearance of Tim Russ in anything, by the way. For that one line, and if you know the line, you know what I'm talking about. And since this is a family-friendly podcast, I won't say it, because if you know it, you know it. And if not, look it up on YouTube, because it's there.
So this is where Tuvok is saying, he's like, oh, you can totally help me with the experience if you just come with me on the mind meld. Like, we're constantly adding new rules to mind melds as we go on.
Yes, yes. Remember when mind melds were extremely dangerous and you only did them unless you really absolutely had to?
Mm-hmm.
That kind of fell off the wayside, didn't it?
Yeah. And then especially when we got to Enterprise, it was kind of like a mix of danger and then everyday use. Like, people, that's just how people talked with one another.
Yeah.
But then
yeah.
You could get an STD if you did that.
Yes. That's right. What was it? The AIDS episode?
Yeah, yeah. It was a couple of episodes. I think it was a couple of episodes. I might be wrong. But it had a great message. But it was just interesting how we go back and forth with mind melds. I mean, like, in Undiscovered Country, we saw that it was analogous to sexual assault. We saw that it was analogous to spreading disease in Enterprise. And then here we see it as a psychiatry tool. And in Next Generation, we see it as a medical tool. Mm-hmm. And it, also in Next Generation, we see it as a family social tool.
Yeah, that's right.
It's just there's so many different aspects to it.
So it depends entirely on context is what I'm getting out of that, aside from the fact that it's a complete plot device, which it is.
Which it is.
Yes.
But it's a
fan
favorite,
I'd say. Oh,
and there's
Captain Sulu. We are now
that's
on
such
the
a hero screen. Shot coming out of the steam and the smoke.
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm Hikaru Sulu.
Yes.
And there's Grace Lee Whitney.
There she is. Yes. Now, I know we're doing this to celebrate her career, but this is not exactly her best performance, acting-wise. I think they gave her the script the day she arrived on set. She didn't study it at all. She just memorized the lines, and it didn't exactly work on delivery. There's parts of it that are very sloppy, and I kind of wonder just how fast they put this together because of all the hoopla with the 30th anniversary. Because, you know, with Trials and Tribulations on DS9, that thing is just perfection. In just about every sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
The cast and crew, they all poured their hearts and souls into it, whereas this is a solid effort, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't measure up to that. So I wonder if there were a lot of last-minute changes or whatnot, and no, I have not read Memory Alpha, so if it's on there, forgive me. I haven't exactly had time to breathe in the last couple of weeks, and so...
No, it's, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's just, you know, everybody has their level of interest or preparation. So I don't know. We won't have any idea, but I absolutely love that. I like that you compared this to Trials and Tribulations because it's very much that essence of, you know, like of a future crew coming back and witnessing an original crew, but this is just in different, like instead of traveling through time, they travel through memory. And I really like that. And Undiscovered Country is my favorite original series movie.
Is it?
And yes, very much so. And I'm very glad that we got to see this. And it's really funny because so... Oh, I love that line.
Yes. You never brought me tea.
That's
because
so
you drink coffee.
You drink coffee, Janeway. You drink coffee.
Now, the question is, does he bring her coffee? They never answered that.
I think he did at least once after this because he's like, you know what, I should bring
Yeah, it was coffee. After because at this point, when he's on Voyager, he's... beyond sucking up to the captain. But here, yeah, I think Janice Rand was onto something like, oh, you're trying to make captain in whatever amount of time. And then it's so funny because then Tuvok is still a lieutenant in the Voyager years because he left Starfleet for a while, then came back. And
right,
he's not an old Vulcan man, but he's old according to our years.
I always, this adds a lot of confusion to the casual fan and sometimes even to the hardcore fan because Tim Russ was in Star Trek Generations.
Yes, he was.
And he was on the Enterprise B, which is an Excelsior class, just like the USS Excelsior. And he was in the same type of uniform, but he was not playing Tuvok. He was just some ensign, some lieutenant or whatever.
Yeah, nameless dude.
And he was a human, though. He was not a Vulcan.
Right.
And so many people confuse that in their brains. Like, I remember having more than in three conversations with people where I've had to convince them that I was like, no, Tim Russ was on the Enterprise B, but he was not a Vulcan. Tuvok was not on the Enterprise
B.
Yeah,
it was
like,
not Tuvok.
He was. I'm sorry, I hate to break it to you, Tristan.
No.
But he was. And then I show them a picture of him with human ears, and they're like, did you Photoshop that? That's what actually somebody said
really?
To me.
Really?
I'm like, watch the movie.
This is what it's come to now. People are just so used to everything being Photoshopped. Oh, that's kind of funny, and it's kind of sad at the same time.
I love the shockwave scene in Undiscovered Country and the way that George Takei hits my god. Nobody else in the history of cinema hits a my god like George Takei. He needs an award.
So scathing, yes. And I do love Star Trek VI as well. I don't know if it's my favorite movie, but it's definitely high up there. And I love the fact that Sulu finally did become a captain, has his own ship, and it is the Excelsior. Never mind Scotty's poo-pooing of it in earlier movies. Sulu, I think, was always all about it.
I love that, too. Like, going back and watching the movies, like, right in Search for Spock, you see Sulu, he's totally enamored by the ship.
Yeah, he thinks it's great.
He's like, it's pretty, it's great. He's like, I hear it has transwarp drive.
Nice work.
And then he gets it. He's captain. And it's just a great. It's just great.
He's where he needs to be. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And here's another thing that I love. You see the red alert, like disco ball at the top in the center of the bridge? Is that not cool?
I never noticed that before.
I don't know if we're going to get another shot of it or not, but it is so freaking awesome. I want that like in my room, just for various different colors for a party, or like if I'm in red alert mode, I'm going to go to red alert and then I can just feel the tension, cut it with a knife.
So for those of you who might have missed it or just listening at home, go to 2215, somewhere around in there, and you'll see the Excelsior disco ball.
It is so cool. I just love that thing. That is like Spencer's Gifts needs to get on that and sell those.
Oh, Spencer's Gifts.
That's so where funny. I think it would make it.
I think you're right. I think if it was sold anywhere, it'd be sold at Spencer's.
Yes, along with the adult board games and toys.
I really wanted Christian Slater to walk by in the background.
Like, that would have been awesome.
Don't say a word. Don't even have the camera focus on him. Just like have him walk
just,
by.
Just
like
have
an extra.
Him there. Yeah.
And people are like, was that Christian Slater?
Oh my god, it was him. Yeah. That they should have done that. Like, honestly, could he have been that busy? Really? They couldn't get him for one day?
Well, in the 90s, maybe.
I don't know.
That was his heyday.
That's true.
Wrong.
George Takei. He's such a wonderful guy.
You know, it's okay to be Takei.
That's right.
Just want to let all you boys and girls out there know that it's okay to be Takei.
Mm-hmm. We should all be Takei. It's very intense right now. Very dramatic.
He has a... Okay.
Just look at his eyes. They're just piercing Tuvok.
I've always enjoyed his voice, and I always thought he had a very distinct voice, but he always kind of sounds like he's getting over a cold. You know what I'm saying?
He's got a little bit of a nasal element to his voice. Like, part of it's coming through his nose.
Yeah, it's not nasally, but it's like, but you're right. There is a nasal aspect.
Right,
to it.
Yeah, like, as if he were congested. I know what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah, there was one moment in Star Trek V when they were in the woods, and it was him and Chekhov, and there was just the epitome of him in a cold. He was just like, he's like, we seem to be caught in some sort of a blizzard. You know, it's just like, I just half expected an achoo after that.
Seriously, it's so cold. Getting sick. Yeah. So anytime they show this shot of this cloud, it reminds me of V'ger. Because it's really bright blue.
I could see that. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah. So we're on the Excelsior, but we're going into V'ger, and I'm very confused because this is happening during the time of Star Trek VI. My mind is blown.
Earlier in the episode, we see the recreation. Actually, it's just straight up footage from Undiscovered Country, but
yes,
where the Excelsior goes into the shockwave. That's one of those times, and I'm sure I've brought this up before, but it's one of those times where I'm like, you're in space! You can go in 360 degrees.
Right. You could go around it. But no!
Nah, it's much cooler to go, turn her into the wave!
That's right. Yeah, you know, and obviously they detected it in mm-hmm. time for them to possibly escape, but that takes away all of the dramatic aspects. So, convenience for special effects, I guess.
And then also we established in The Next Generation that no natural force can go faster than warp, but then we contradict that in Enterprise.
That's right.
They could have gone the warp, maybe they couldn't. I don't know, it depends on who you talk to.
Right, yeah.
Oh, this is a good conversation between Janeway and Kim when they talk about old school Federation, old school Starfleet, you know.
Oh, yes, yes. It's good stuff.
I like that where it's just, where Kim's like, they falsified their records? She's like, it was a different time, you know, it was awesome. Like she was there, you know? She's like, it was the old West.
Yeah. Well, this is Captain Janeway. She knows all.
Well, you know, she talks about it in such a romantic way, and that's kind of how we view the original series, is that, it has its issues, maybe be a little corny, but it's romantic, and not just in a man and woman sexual way, but just the whole romance of the Old West, final frontier, and just like just going out there and boldly going where no one has gone before. It's just mm-hmm. that was the beginning of it. You know, that's where it was very truly the unknown. And
kind of like the space gold rush, if you will. You know, exploring the frontier and finding out what's out there and the wagon train to the stars. I mean, that is very much what it is. And so it is kind of cool to see them looking upon that as the glory days of Starfleet. Just how we look at it nostalgically.
Yeah, I think they knew exactly what they were doing when they wrote this scene mm-hmm. because they're like, hey, it's the 30th anniversary. This is how we view the original series. Let's make this canon inside of Star Trek where they view it the same way we do.
Right, right. Well, let's not forget, I mean, Captain Kirk and crew were at the front lines. They were legendary. And even in the Enterprise B era, Captain John Harriman, I mean, he read about those missions in grade school. So they were heroes pretty quick
That's
on.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they were celebrities by the time of Enterprise B and then legends by the time of Enterprise D.
Right, yes. Did it ever bother you that there was so much press in Star Trek Generations, you know, on the Enterprise B when Kirk, Scotty, and Chekhov are on there? And, like, do you think we'd be beyond that?
No, not at all. I found it fascinating. I think, I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying. But I saw it more as this isn't a historical event, not paparazzi. Like these were I want to believe that because we evolved as a culture, and not just in technology, but we evolve as a culture where money is no longer the driving force in our lives, that journalism swings back to the way that it was, where it's no longer pop news and the Perez Hiltons of the world are gone and everything like that. And there's no such thing as TMZ, where it's just like, this is a historic launch of an historic line of ships. And the people want to know about it. They want to read about it. They want to see it. And so that's how I viewed it.
I want to go along with that. I really love that idea because I think journalism is a very important and necessary part of our society to keep mm-hmm. everybody accountable and aware of what is happening in the world. And it's really sad, in my opinion, that things have kind of gone the way they are. I mean, it's very hard to not find a news program that's not just a news host injecting their opinion on what's happening. You can't just get what's happening straight up.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do that now. And so what we hear is all so skewed. Unless you're really digging and you're a really good student of studying the news, it's really hard to find out what is really going on. Like, what is just the straight up truth? What are the facts and nothing else?
And that's how I viewed it with Star Trek Generations, that it was that kind of journalism. And I was glad that we got to see, I know a lot of people don't like the journalism aspect in Deep Space Nine with Jake, but I liked it because it's, you know, it's not just this anonymous, you know, like news source where like, because we're in Starfleet, everybody knows everything because they just make reports. And so everybody in Starfleet knows what's going on mm-hmm. because they can just look it up on their computer and like, oh, Captain Picard filed a report so we can read it, blah, blah, blah. But what about Federation news? You know, like what about Earth? Like how do they get their information? And, and it, you know, Deep Space Nine showed that there still are journalists. So that's how I viewed it.
Okay. I can definitely go along with that. That's a much better view than kind of what I had, which was just media looking bad once again. Because it really doesn't have to be a bad profession, or it doesn't have to be looked upon as bad by the average person, because they can be intrusive, and they do things wrong. It's human beings running this industry, but there is a good and important purpose to it, and that is to catalog information. I mean, we need to take this stuff down.
I do like this quote right here, where Tuvok said, it's like, I've had to endure the egocentric nature of humanity, where you believe that everyone in the galaxy should be like you. Star Trek is aware of this. They are aware, yes, like the writers know that they have done this to themselves for decades now.
Right, which is fantastic.
I agree. I like the self-awareness where humans are arrogant, and I feel like Janeway is the epitome of that arrogance. Where
hate to agree with you, but yes.
I'm not trying to come down on Janeway. You know we love Janeway, but like she is an arrogant, self-righteous person. They say that all throughout the show. Like people,
yeah, she can be. Like she's not she all the time, be. But she definitely can be. Yeah.
But those are her negative aspects. I have the same negative aspects. I still consider myself a good person, but I know that I can be very self-righteous when I want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like she is very much the epitome of humans, where she will say, like, epitome of 24th century humans, where she'll say, like, oh, no, like, we, you know, we're a peaceful race. We don't want money or anything like that, but we're very peaceful. But if you cross us, I'll fire phasers at you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, like, you know, how can you be peaceful if you, like, but you can drop the hat at pulling the trigger at any time? And then she says, she's like, no, we can't get involved. Every culture is unique, and they have the right to create, to be in their culture the way that they want to be. But then when you cross her with your culture, she'll say, well, you need to correct that because you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do that, because the Federation says it's wrong. That's right. Kind of how humans are in the 24th century. And
yeah, I mean, that's, you know, it's human nature, I think. We all have a certain level of egocentrism thinking, despite however well-meaning we are. We all want to be good people, I think, unless you're just downright evil and you know you want to do bad things. And there are people out there who do that, but we all try. We're all trying. But by sheer virtue of being human, we automatically think we are the best. We are the highest thing that's out there, to our knowledge. That's what we want to believe. And actually, I don't believe that, because I think animals are way smarter than we are and we're just not listening. But
like the dolphins. No, no, there was an interview. I'm sure I mentioned this before. I think I'm just repeating myself today, but there was an interview with.
Hey, it's called Flashback.
It is. That's right. There was an interview with Willem Dafoe. And somebody asked him, some interviewer said, like, do you like playing good guys or bad guys more in movies? And he says, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because everybody thinks they're righteous.
Yeah, the bad guy thinks that he's doing the right thing.
Yeah, and that just struck a chord with me. And in the realm of acting as well as just in humanity, you know, like, everybody thinks they're doing the right thing. Janeway thinks she's doing the right thing. Sulu thinks she's doing the right thing. The Klingons think they're doing the right thing.
Right.
It's all a matter of perspective. And I've always really appreciated that in Star Trek.
Yeah, it's what you consider the right thing for your own interests, though.
Yeah.
I mean, Star Trek tries to think of the greater good, but we are all very egocentrically motivated. Let's be honest. It's really hard to completely be selfless and escape that. I think maybe Mother Teresa did that. Not many of the rest of us, though. We can try all we want.
Now, with the view screen, this was one of the rare cases where if the camera was off to the side, it still looked like a two-dimensional image. Mm. Now, we don't see the view screen off to the side very often. We see it mainly straight on. But there are many episodes in The Next Generation where we see a profile of Picard standing and looking at the view screen. And as we're viewing the view screen, as the audience, we see the profile of the individual speaking. So what that means is that your angle changes depending on how you view it on the bridge, which means you see a three-dimensional image.
Whoa. I never caught on to that.
Yeah, like, sir, people who are laughing at me or like scoffing at me right now saying that's not true, seriously, watch some of those early episodes of TNG and you will see what I'm talking about. The only way that it's possible is if the view screen is much more like a window. Then it's not like a holographic projector. It's not a two-dimensional screen. It's much more like a window. So if you move from one side of the bridge to the other, that your perspective will change. It's not flat. But in this episode on the Excelsior just now, it seemed a little flat. Because we were off to the side. Yeah.
That would make sense, though, to have that kind of technology by this time. Because yeah, I hate to totally think does. That TV screens wouldn't be a whole lot more advanced in the 23rd and 24th centuries. So maybe that's our next step.
Maybe. And that's also another thing that really bugged me in Star Trek 09, where I did like that it was like plexiglass, and then they put the technology over the plexiglass. I did like that in Star Trek 09. But Nero's face was always squished. And I was like, okay, it's the 23rd century. We have starships that can travel faster than life. Are you trying to tell me that we still can't get the freaking aspect ratio right on the button on the remote for the television?
Oh man. You know who we need to get on for the aspect ratio podcast is Mike Schindler, because he's all about that and knows way more than I think either one of us combined. I mean, he studies this at length.
I once taught a class on aspect ratio, just on aspect ratio.
Oh, okay, well then you two need to get together. Sorry, I was underestimating. I know you're a video junkie, but man.
Well, no, what I'm saying is that I once went to him I had a few questions. For the class that I was teaching, and he was able to give me a little bit more of the history on a specific aspect ratio.
I gotcha, okay.
So what I'm saying is, yes, he's a very smart individual when it comes to that stuff. And so if you ever have one of those kind of questions, talk to him.
Yeah, he knows everything about that. Now, when they're going to the flashbacks of this young girl who's falling, I think they could have used her as the Catherine Janeway stand-in.
Yeah, it would have been much more believable than the other one, the chubby, freckled, red-haired one.
Yeah, like, no offense to the girl at all, it's just she does not look like a young Catherine Janeway, whereas the other girl has kind of like really long, kind of like lightish brown, blondish, dirty blonde hair, which would definitely pass as Janeway.
Mm-hmm.
Would have made a lot more sense.
There was a lot of people who there's a lot of people who believe that she's a redhead. And like Lori, a former co-host of To the Journey, she believes that she's a redhead. And we hear this all the time. The only time I've seen her as a redhead is when she plays the character Red on Orange is the New Black.
And there she is really red.
I don't see strawberry blonde. I don't see red hair. I see brown. Like right now, I see brown. She has brown hair. It's brown hair.
Well, okay, look back to the really early scenes of Caretaker. There is a lot more red in the wig that she used.
That is
in
true.
That episode. So it changes. But by then, by this time, they're much more on a lightish brown with some blonde highlights and a hint of red, but she's not really red.
I don't see it. I see more red in your hair now than I have ever seen in Janeway's.
Fair enough. And my hair is not even that red. I mean, there's red, but it's not crazy red.
I forgot about in this episode, I really did forget that Janeway is, like, people are aware of Janeway now. Like, there's something went wrong and
his
memories are interacting with her.
Here's another gripe I have. I'm sorry, but Rand's uniform is not going to fit Janeway. They've got two totally different body types, and I'm not saying one is better than the other. That's just logistics. That's not going to work.
It's just a fact.
Yeah.
I've always call me weird, but you know, watching so many James Bond films as a kid and spy films and everything like that, I've always wanted to just knock somebody out like Captain Kirk. Just hit him on the neck with a karate chop and then put on their uniform real quick. I've wanted to do that so bad.
That'd be fantastic.
I am a 20-something guy who lives in suburbia in middle America. I know it's never going to happen, but I want to so bad.
Hey, I think every suburban dwelling 20-something guy has that superhero dream, whichever it is of your choice. I think, you know, it varies by person to person, but we've all got that epic hero scene that we would just love to live out in our lives somehow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's yours.
Like jumping off of a helicopter with a knife in your mouth as you dive into the water, you know, that kind of thing.
Wow. Might as well aim high, right?
We've all thought about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you think about what that epic movie scene would be that you'd want to be in.
Now, do you know anything about the behind the scenes of this? Like, is this a redress? Is this bridge, like, was this in storage or something? Or
sadly, I do not. Normally, I will read up on Memory Alpha to brush up on behind the scenes stuff about an episode, but I was actually with the Educating Geeks gals right before we recorded this episode, planning some stuff for Phoenix Comic Con, which is coming up in about, a day from when we release this episode, and did not have time to prepare, because I've been a little crazy.
I just looked it up, and it is, they rebuilt it. They did it in less than 2 weeks.
They did? Really? Wow. That's pretty impeccable. I mean, look at, maybe there's small differences, but I think it definitely passes.
It was, they said that it was in order to build it from scratch for Star Trek VI, it took 12 weeks, but they did it in 2 for this episode.
Wow. That's really impressive.
Yeah.
So they worked their little behinds off on this episode. I mean, they put a lot of work into Trials and Tribulations on DS9. We know a lot of stuff about that. But they clearly worked just as hard on this episode as well. And I think they did a fantastic job. Yeah, I'm sorry that's not Catherine Janeway.
It just doesn't look anything like her whatsoever.
No, it really doesn't. I'm sorry.
It's funny because whenever I read Mosaic, the novel about Janeway's past, that image of that little redheaded girl just sneaks in there when I read it every once in a while.
I've intentionally not done that because that's not her. Something is very wrong. I don't know, maybe memory distortion? Like, right now they're going through a sequence of various kids. This was just some random kid. It wasn't Janeway.
That's
what happened. Yeah.
just a random kid named Catherine with a Y. It doesn't matter. It was a coincidence, yeah.
There's tons of Catherines out there. Doesn't mean it was her.
I did find this fascinating about the episode, about, like, the backstory of, the virus, you know, like it, it thrives in the brain and it evades the immune system by disguising itself as a horrible memory so that the brain pushes it away from everything else. So it has a nice little place to live. I think that's a great idea. That's a great sci-fi idea.
It is. And Brandon Braga does a really nice job with these most of the time. It's pretty novel. Wow, how did you come up with that? That's a fantastic idea, and it's a great sci-fi concept.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. It definitely works. But just think about that. Wow. The future of diseases. You know, like, how would you prevent that? Like, how would you get why would you make a vaccine for that?
Not Could today.
Could you? I don't know.
And here we go. The obligatory Aaron Sorkin-esque shot down the hallway where they're walking and talking about the moral of the story or the events that happened that week, you know?
Right. Kind of like how at the end of a TOS episode, they've got to have that laugh on the bridge.
Yes, that's right.
This is their counterpart.
Like, yeah. This is totally the Voyager counterpart.
Yeah.
See,
I learned something today.
Like, somebody has a clipboard and just, like, smacks it on somebody's back like, ah, ha, ha, you're right.
Yeah. Oh, you.
Yeah, that's pretty much how it was. She hit the wrong button.
She did, didn't she? They didn't want us to notice.
Yeah.
Well, that is the episode.
I tried to get away with that one time in a short film I did, where I didn't want the character to actually hit the button because it would actually open the door. And I thought I was being sly because putting it in the bottom of the frame, but, like, almost every single person who watched it was like, they didn't hit the button. I was like, shut up!
Darn it. It's those little details, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, flashback isn't the only thing that we've been talking about on Trek FM this week, and here's a little glimpse at what else is happening on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm. Standard orbit.
The Vulcans came. Maybe it's a Vulcan Thanksgiving. The Vulcans came to Earth and we gave them corn.
Okay. No, we gave them whiskey.
Well, I mean, corn whiskey then.
Okay. All right, there we go. Cool.
The orb.
I'd like to see the Borg assimilate Ferenginar, and then they would become bankers. You know, I could see...
Oh my gosh,
I could see
bankers.
Drones. Yeah, yeah.
The world's strictest bank ever. Right. I'm sorry, you have not paid your loan. You will be assimilated.
The nanites go into you.
Yes.
The ready room.
Oh, man. I can see, instead of Kirk, it's Mike Ditka throughout the entire
He's just, like, chewing the whole time. Like, yeah. Edith Keeler must die.
Oh, she's got to die.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The theme song, I mean, I guess it's cool. The thing that I was kind of struck by was the opening title sequence itself.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
It's literally like all three of them are running for their lives.
The 602 Club.
But I loved the scene with Lucy and Tumnus when they first meet, because mm-hmm. that's a very yeah. vivid description in the book. And I felt like they really nailed that in terms of the way it looked. And the CGI was advanced enough so that James McAvoy really looked like he had fawn legs. And
literary treks.
Tell us about coming up with this story for the crew of the Enterprise. Where did it come from for you? And what were some of your inspirations for diving into these characters once again?
Well, Troublesome Minds was such a book that it left me with as if I didn't quite finish. I'd come up with Troublesome Minds as an idea. The idea was, what pushes Spock toward Kolinar?
Axanar, the official podcast.
There is more to life than just get up, go to work, come home, watch TV, go to bed, repeat until dead. There's more to life than that. And I believe that that's the essential magic of Star Trek, is that it says, it appeals to that urge to get up off the couch, walk out the front door, and go see what's out there.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of our shows. I am really excited about the fact that we have yet another show on the network. If you are not aware of this yet, we have recently assimilated Women at Warp into the Trek FM network. And this is a quartet of four ladies talking Star Trek, including First Time Trekker on Twitter. That is her handle. She is a part of this panel. And it's going to be nice to have a little more estrogen on the network. So I'm very excited about that, and welcome to them. Very cool to have you here. We're glad that you became a part of the Trek FM network. And of course, none of our Trek FM shows are possible without the help of a sponsor, so let's hear a little bit about that.
Our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to, but never thought you had the time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible has something for everyone. You'll be happy to hear that both Mosaic and Pathways are available from Audible. As a Trek.fm listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting To the Journey and Trek.fm.
All right, now before we go, we have some big news, Tristan. I'm really excited about this. And that is 100 ratings on the US iTunes Store. We have surpassed that now, so woo! Yeah!
To the journey, y'all!
Yeah, that's right, to the journey. We have a couple of people to thank who left us not only ratings, but reviews. Let's thank Guybrush T and D. Raymond 1 for helping us reach the... plus 100 rating mark, and by giving us a excellent review. Guybrush has a huge compliment for us in the US iTunes Store. He said he was never really into podcasts until he came across us, and now he's hooked. So we helped him get into podcasts. How cool is that?
Very cool. Very cool. I love hearing that stuff.
thank you so much. And then D. Raymond confessed that he or she is also a shipper. And then all I've got to say to that is Janeway and Chakotay forever, baby. It's forever. Real. It's like Santa Claus. You just got to believe. All right. Well, another thing before we go, before we wrap up, we want to thank our associate producers who help out the network via Patreon. This is patreon.com/trekfm. And our associate producers are Kenneth Tripp, Jamie Deuce, and Aaron Harvey. You can follow Aaron on Twitter at GeekFilter. He is a fantastic designer and is doing some lovely work for us here at Trek FM with a lot more to come. So stay tuned. And if you yourself have not taken a look at our Patreon page, go there, take a look at what we have to offer. There's various perks depending on what level of contribution, and it's a monthly thing. So whether you can donate $5 or $50 or even more if you're really super rich, we really appreciate the help of everybody who helps keep the network running, because it really is a fan-run network these days, and we cannot thank you enough for all of your support. Now, all of that said, we're going to shift gears and look forward to next week. So what are we doing?
Next week is something that we're really interested in, and this is a part two of something that we did previously, and it's, what if Janeway died during the run of the show? And we had such great content in that episode, and we had so much of it, that we didn't get to anywhere near the amount of notes that we had, and so we have to keep going. I think we started and finished with season three, and there's right. So many other places of interest in the show where, like, what if Janeway sacrificed herself for the crew here, or what if what if Janeway died here, or what if, you know, like, there's so many aspects to it,
so many opportunities, because I think, as we mentioned in that episode, Janeway just loves to put herself on the line, risking her own death.
And just as a message to those who are listening right now, we absolutely love Janeway. Janeway is our captain. We think she's a great character. She is a phenomenal character. She's brought to life by a phenomenal actress. This is the what if game. Okay,
yeah,
this is
please
the what if
do not
game.
Misinterpret this as the fact that we wanted her to die. We are just exploring hypothetical scenarios.
This is like what we do with the Mirror Universe episodes. We're not saying we wanted this to happen. We're not saying we wanted Harry Kim to be evil. We're not saying that we wanted the Doc to be a Cardassian. It's just a what if game. That's all it is.
Come along with us as we make this stuff up and explore the what ifs. But that's not going to happen until next week. So until then, this has been To the Journey.
To the Journey!